Opinions expressed in this program are for general information purposes only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or any specific security. It is only intended to provide education about the financial industry. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult your financial advisor prior to investing. Any past performance discussed during this program is no guarantee of future results. Any indices referenced for comparison are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. As always, please remember investing involves risk and possible loss of principal capital. Please seek advice from a licensed professional. Bulwark Capital Management is an investment advisor representative of Clear Creek Financial Management, a registered investment advisor.
Welcome to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham on AM 770 KTTH. Whether it's preservation of capital or an aggressive growth strategy, every investor needs a clearly defined risk profile. Know Your Risk Radio is brought to you by Bulwark Capital Management, helping families navigate the ever-changing and often treacherous financial markets. Know Your Risk Radio starts now. Here's your host, Zach Abraham.
All right, welcome back, and thank you for joining us. This is Know Your Risk Radio, and as always, it is still the most scintillating hour of financial radio. And I really mean that this week, and I mean it because you don't have to just listen to me. We're spicing things up a little bit. Have an extended interview with Brent Johnson of Santiago Gold Fund and Keith Weiner of MonetaryMetals.com, one of the preeminent gold experts in the world, having a little discussion about economics, gold, markets, all that kind of stuff. So that's going to take up the vast majority of the show. And we've got a little bit of time here talking about markets. You know, markets are up. Not a lot changed since last week, since we last saw you. Keeping an eye on things like gold. Gold hit 1,300, which is a big resistance area, and it's something we're keeping an eye on. Guys, the other thing I want to say is this is starting to feel like it's got a little more legs, and this illustrates why we talk about, and I said it, I thought this was a bear market rally. I thought this might be the beginning of the economic unwind. I'm still leaning to that side of things. Everybody's getting caught up with how much markets have run, but I think we need to keep it in context. We're still about 11.5%, 12% down on the highs. So don't get too caught up in it. Remember, we want to keep an eye on what. Had an interesting conversation with a client that thought we'd performed really bad. Actually, very disappointed. He's been with us for a short period of time. And I just said to him, bad in relation to what? And he's like, well, we're down. And I go, the whole market's down. We got to keep context here. We got to keep an eye on what's really happening. Like I said, we're still almost 12% off the highs here. You know, this is not clear sailing, right? But one of the things we talked about last week, especially on the show, is remember, we don't do market timing. We're not trying to anticipate which direction the market's going to go and all that kind of stuff. But we're 10 years into the longest cycle, and this is still very much a risk management environment. You got to keep that in mind. Could it break out to new all-time highs? And I could be wrong. Oh, absolutely. You know, that's the caveat. And like I told you guys, I'm going to give you the straight feed. I'm not going to try to say that we get everything right. We don't. Nobody does. But this will be really interesting. And I think the area that we're watching right now is that 2,700 area on the S&P. I just think that's we've pushed up here to 2,670 a couple times, haven't been able to bust through it. But I think the other fascinating thing that's going on right now is this whole recovery has been different than all the other recoveries we've seen over the last 10 years because the economic underpinnings aren't there. We're getting bad earnings misses from companies. We're seeing slowdowns all across the world. China continues to decelerate. Big issues there. And I think China really is the whole market update. And the story, the media, the thesis the media wants you to believe is that, oh, that's just a factor of the trade, you know, issues. That's not true. China started showing deceleration and problems 2 years ago. This has nothing to do with the trade. Trade situation isn't helping, but this was happening regardless. Okay, so let's keep our eyes on the bogey. And we'll continue to watch oil. Oil's going to be a good proxy. Oil is still down massively from the highs. I'm trying to pull up the spot price right now, and I'm not seeing it. It's great time for the internet to freeze on us. Here we go. Yeah, we're at $53. So not in danger territory, but still well off the highs. Guys, again, risk management. Okay, you got to make sure we're diversified. We got to make sure risk managed. And still, we're really far into this expansion, like you've heard me say since the first time I came on the show. And we need to be focused on reducing risk and staying safe. Okay. And if you want to know how we do that, if you want to know how we expose our clients to market gains while insuring them against losses on parts of their portfolio, how we diversify, how we increase gains. Remember, we're not putting money under a mattress. How we increase gains while lowering fees and lowering risk. Call us 866-779-RISK. Again, 866-779-RISK. Go to Bulwark Capital's website, knowyourriskradio.com. You guys know the drill. Anyway, we got to get rolling because I want to leave time for this interview. Brilliant minds of finance. Great track records, great guys, and I just think you'll get a lot out of it. I certainly did interviewing. So anyway, stick around for the interview. Have a wonderful weekend, and we'll talk to you next week. This is Know Your Risk Radio on AM 770 KTTH.
What does outside-the-box investing really look like? Schedule your free risk review with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management, and see a side-by-side comparison of your current portfolio versus one Zach would recommend. Schedule your free risk review at knowyourriskradio.com.
I have to tell you, what a relief for my wife and me when we got signed up for long-term care coverage. The more I learned about the fact that nearly 3 out of 4 of us will need some form of long-term care in our retirement, there are so many issues at play. For some people, they can't afford it and they become a burden on their friends and family. For others, you do have money set aside, but it wipes out everything that you've saved. And maybe most importantly, it's about having a plan so that all your children have to do is carry out your wishes. It's not a burden on them. And that's why I love the advice we got from Brian Ott and 525 Advisors. We started by going to one of Brian's free classes, and that's what I recommend you do to find out about all the different plans they offer. Brian does have a few classes coming up this month. Seats are limited, so sign up now at 525longtermcare.com. You'll get a free copy of Brian's book. Too. Go to 525longtermcare.com, 525longtermcare.com.
Volatile markets are never fun, but it provides the opportunity to see exactly how much risk you're exposed to. Hey, it's Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital and host of Know Your Risk Radio. So what do you do? Look, safety doesn't have to mean lower returns. By using our bond replacement strategy, our clients have actually increased their returns while being insured against loss and all the while lowering their fees. Call now and get your free copy of our brand new booklet, Common Sense Investing, 866-779-RISK. Again, 866-779-RISK. Or go to knowyourriskradio.com.
And I got to tell you, you have to read Zach's brand new version of Common Sense Investing. You'll learn how to protect your retirement against loss, but still participate in market gains. Call now, get your free copy, 866-779-RISK. That's 866-779-RISK. Or go to knowyourriskradio.com. Bulwark Capital Management is a DBA of Clear Creek Financial Management, a registered investment advisor.
You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.
All right, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us. And we got a special treat dialed up today, Darren. Darren's working the monitors, as always. But want to introduce our guests, plural. First time we've kind of had this round table set up, two guys on. You guys all know Brent Johnson of Santiago Gold. Brent, thanks for joining us.
Yep, absolutely.
And then our new addition to the show, Keith Weiner, CEO of Monetary Metals, gold expert. Do you feel comfortable being called a gold expert, Keith?
I don't normally sort of position myself that way. I think Margaret Thatcher has said, I guess having gold expertise is kind of like having power of being a lady. You need to say it, probably not.
But I'm telling you, if you're not comfortable with it, I'm calling you that because I've been really impressed with your work and watched some of your videos. And I just think the way that you think about stuff, especially as it relates to gold, I love your take on things. And I'm thrilled to have you on here.
Well, thanks.
And hey, and a good day for this too, gentlemen. We've got gold knocking right up against 1,300. Did we hit 1,300 today? Did we break that number? I know we're like 12.
Yeah, a couple hours ago it did. Well, the futures are above 1,300 currently. Spot's a little bit below it, but at one point earlier today, spot jumped above 1,300 for at least a couple minutes.
Well, hey, that's something. Okay, so let's get right into it. We'll start with Brent. Keith will do that. Then we'll jump to Keith. And this is much for my edification, this for the listeners, but interesting end to the year last year, interesting start to the year this year. Brent, what is your, give us kind of your global view of what you see going on. What are the most important things you see going on? What happened at the end of the year? How are you looking at things? How are you taking things? And then also give us an update on the whole milkshake theory and where we're sitting there.
All right. Well, I don't know if things have changed dramatically since the last time we talked, but, you know, I continue to believe that the whole global capital markets are all one trade right now, and that one trade is the dollar. So everything is being based off the dollar right now, in my opinion. You know, whether you're talking about equities or fixed income or gold or whatever it is. And there's really a big, you know, tug of war between the dollar bulls and the dollar bears. You know, and I don't think there's been any resolution yet, to be honest. You know, it's coinciding, you know, kind of within the run-up to the end of the year and the first 3 weeks of this year, you know, it coincides with a government shutdown. And so, you know, we had the huge sell-off in equities going into the Christmas, and we've had the huge rally since then. So we're everything's about where it was a month ago. You know, today gold's up $15 today, but this is really the first move of the year.
Right.
I mean, I think it closed the year around 1280. It was around 1280 last night when I went to bed. And, you know, it's at 1298 today. So today's kind of the first big move in gold of the year. Equities are up today. You know, we've kind of bumped back up against the 25,000 level on the Dow and the 2600 level or the 2700 level on the S&P. So nothing's clear. I think we're still trying to kind of figure out what the Fed's going to do, which way they're going to go, what Draghi's going to do.
I think the Fed's also trying to figure out what they're going to do.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, the Fed's always two steps behind. So,
good Lord.
I don't have an answer for everybody. I still continue to believe that the dollar is going to get stronger in the future, and I think that is going to be the driver of major returns over the next 12 to 18 months.
Well, I'm right there with you. All right, Keith, how about you? Now, I know you've got your eyes on gold. I also know that you're looking at a lot more than just gold. What are you seeing? What's your take on where we're at? The Fed, kind of give me your global, you know, 30,000-foot view of where we're sitting right now.
So my thesis is that we are in a falling interest rate environment. That is the big long-term trend. Started in 1981. There's obviously jitter along the way. I suspect that every time the interest rate turned up, even through the 1980s, there were you know, spikes up, and then the 1990s, I'm sure that every time everybody said that's it, it's a return to normal interest rates, and yet the interest rate continues to fall, and fall and fall and fall and fall, and you know, last year it looked like, you know, the interest rate's going to rise, and Jay Powell is serious about hiking rates and so forth, and all along I've been saying he can't. And so I want to point to two interesting things, or things that I think are interesting. The first is that the Bank for International Settlements has a definition of a zombie. And this is one of those things, you ever seen the movie Broken Arrow? I think there was a line in it where they come into the president's office and they're like, sir, Broken Arrow, sir. And he says, what the hell is a broken arrow? And they say, sir, that's when a nuclear warhead has gone missing. I mean, totally forgettable movie, but the one line that stuck in my mind was, he says, I don't know what's worse, that a nuclear warhead has gone missing, or that apparently it happens so often that you all have a term for it. And so the Bank for International Settlements has... Do you remember that?
Oh, I remember it too. The jump the shark moment of that movie was when John Travolta was fist fighting Howie Long. That's kind of where I went, whoa. No, I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah.
So the Bank for International Settlements has a term called zombie. And to give the real brief version of it, a definition of it, it's when a corporation has profits that are less than its interest expense. And so obviously that's only possible by dint of two things. One is extraordinarily low interest rates. And number two, a very forgiving, permissive credit environment. In a credit environment, everybody's reaching for yield.
Right.
So just as an aside, I was in Wyoming last week. The Wyoming legislature is working on some legislation that would require the state runs three different funds, require the state funds to have some gold in them. And one of the things that came out, talking with the treasurer and some of the legislators, is that the state is sitting on right now $220 million loss on emerging market debt. Now, to put that in perspective, Wyoming has the lowest population of any state. It's 500,000 people. So I think that's about $440 for every man, woman, and child was lost on their bet on emerging market debt.
One asset
and
class.
If you just count, if you count taxpayers, I'm sure that's got to be over $1,000 each.
Wow.
So, yeah. Why does the state of Wyoming have emerging market debt? And it's called reach for yield. When the Fed suppresses the rate of interest, then, you know, people, you know, can't get a decent yield on normal investments. Then they go and buy the bonds of, I don't know whether it was Argentina or Ghana or what, you know, what toxic waste that they bought. But, you know, the actuaries say that your fund is supposed to get 7.5% return or whatever, and that's how you get it. So, the zombie companies find it's easy to fund their losses in an environment where interest rates are so incredibly low. So the last time I saw a graph updated from the Bank for International Settlements, the graph was from 2015. So this is before interest rates really began to move up. I think there had been one rate hike or something. And I don't know what the graph was published in 2015. I don't know when their last data point was either. By that point, the rate of the total percentage of zombie debt, or total percentage of debt, corporate debt outstanding that was zombie, was rising sharply for several years leading into that graph. And by 2015, it was well over 10% of all corporate debt outstanding was zombie.
Wow.
Now, you want my sort of current update? Well, since 2015, there's been quite a bit of rate hiking by the Fed. And that means that if your profit was less than your interest expense back in 2014 to 2015, just imagine when you have to roll your debt at the new rate. Whatever that new rate might be, it's going to be 200 or 300 basis points higher than whatever it was when you last financed yourself in 2013 or 2014. And so one by one, I mean, to know which company is going to fall prey when, you'd need a sort of calendar of seeing that wall of of debt roll that has to occur. But you can be sure that anybody that was a zombie when the Fed funds rate was 25 basis points is certainly more so a zombie when the Fed funds rate is 200 basis points. And a lot of companies that weren't zombie at that time find themselves to be zombie under the current cycle. So if the Fed persists in this, they're going to create an awful lot of, or I should say precipitate an awful lot of bankruptcies from the places you would expect, and then probably from a lot of unexpected, quarters as well.
Yeah, we follow the corporate debt market a lot, and this is that's why I'm glad we had you on, Keith, because even I'm hearing you. I haven't seen that graph, but I'm hearing you talk about this, and even though that's something we're paying attention to all the time, you hear some of these new data points you hadn't heard before, and it's breathtaking. It's incredible. So now going back to Brent here, and I want to hear your thoughts on this as well, Keith. One of the things that is really interesting to me, we've all been in this business long enough to know, look, we've got takes on things, we've got ideas, we've got directions we think things are going to go. Yet at the same time, and from reading and looking at both of your stuff, and listening to you, I know you'll agree with me here. We'll all sit there and say, look, but that's the way I see it now, and it is very possible that I end up being proven wrong. But one of the things that I'm looking at, and again, I want to hear your take, whether you agree or not, just give us the straight scoop. One of the things that's really captivating me right now is we are approaching these massive breaking points, right? Where, where exactly those break points are, nobody knows, but just we're coming up against walls to a lot of these situations. I think the China situation right now with trade is a perfect example, right? You have two recalcitrant parties involved in these negotiations, and really neither one of them benefits from rolling over, right? And I'm not saying they won't get something figured out. I'd probably bet that at least a cosmetic deal will get announced at some point. Maybe not. Who knows? But the debt situations that you're talking about, Keith, all these things coming to a head where you just go, look, physically, I think the least likely outcome is that we can keep rolling for an extended period of time. These things have to come come to a head, right? We're reaching these breaking points. Brent, do you agree with that? Do you think I'm looking at the markets and this whole setup and going, look, I don't know exactly how it's going to play out, but we're going to see fireworks. We're not going back to 10 on the VIX for extended periods of time. The game is on. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I do. I think the dominoes that have stood up for an amazingly long period of time are going to start to fall, right? And who exactly the first domino is, I'm not sure. I tend to think it will happen in Europe quicker than anywhere else, but it could easily happen somewhere else. And I think once that first domino goes, it sets off a chain reaction, right?
Yep.
I think my biggest take is many of the knock-on effects of these, dominoes starting to fall might not go down exactly the way, they always have in the past, or they might surprise the people, even those that are ready for the dominoes to start falling. And, I've been a big gold advocate for a number of years, and in the last two or three years, I've started not advocating for a stronger dollar, because I don't necessarily want that to happen. I just think that's what's going to happen. And so, I think that, I think it gets down to when I talk to a lot of people in the gold world, especially, they talk about the absolute game, right?
Yep.
Fiat currencies are going to go to zero. Real assets will protect your purchasing power, so own real assets. And that's kind of the absolute game. I certainly agree with that. I just don't think that game is here yet. I think the zombies, as Keith referred to them, are going to keep fighting with each other for a while, right? And let's call the zombies are the dominoes, right?
Yep.
There's a lot of zombie companies, but there's a lot of zombie countries as well.
Yeah.
And I tend to think that you could probably even lump the United States in as one of those zombies if you really got down to brass tacks about what we owed and what we have and all that kind of stuff. I just think that we're the strongest of the zombies. And so you have a choice. You can either just buy a bunch of gold and go hide in a hole somewhere till all the zombies are dead, or you can, try to allocate some assets to the biggest and the strongest of the zombies. And, it's kind of my job to not just do gold. My clients have allocations to gold, but I have allocations to other things as well. So, I certainly have cash, but part of my job is also to find the biggest and the baddest of the zombies, I guess, if that's the right way to say it, and place some of our allocation towards them. And, so that's kind of how I think we're at. I think we're at the point where the zombies are going to start falling and they're going to start having knock-on effects on the other zombies. So I agree with your assessment that, the days of the 10 on the VIX and just, up and to the right, smooth sailing on, markets is probably over.
Yeah, and it's not mine, obviously, and I know you both have heard it, but the analogy I've used when describing the United States and the U.S. dollar is, look, you may not like it, but it's the cleanest dirty shirt. And when you're looking at a world that is awash in U.S. dollar denominated debt, and for those of you that don't know, if you want some good entertainment, go to Twitter and get involved and be a spectator of this fascinating back and forth between Luke Grohman and Brent Johnson. It's just entertaining. And Brent, I know you'll agree with this. I think Luke is a brilliant guy. I think that Luke is... I agree with virtually everything he says. I just don't agree with the way it's going to, or excuse me, not the timing of it. Right. I just don't agree with his sequence.
Right.
That's the only thing I disagree with, because I keep coming back down to this. If we've got a global slowdown, Keith's talking about all these zombies. We all know that that's out there. You have a global slowdown. 70% of all this isn't the number 70%. I want to say outstanding debt in the world is U.S. dollar denominated. Is that right?
Yeah,
I don't know the exact number, but it sounds very plausible.
Yeah.
Yeah, it sounds right to me.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, caveat there, but I think it's 70%. When those things start toppling over, it won't be about whether they want dollars or not, right? It just forces their hand. It's the mechanics of the market. And I actually don't think that that is necessarily a bearish thing for gold, ironically. Keith, what is your take on this topic? And do you think that this, where are you at on in the interim? Obviously, I know for a fact we all agree about where the dollar is heading. But do you think gold and the dollar can rally at the same time? What's your take on this whole thing?
There's so many things for me to say. The first is that I think the dollar can only be measured in gold, but not the other way around.
Yeah.
And so I think people measure the dollar in terms of other currencies. And I certainly see the other currencies going down in dollar terms. You mentioned Luke, and one of the things I've tweeted to him in response to something he said, you know, people talk about de-dollarization and the world getting rid of the dollars. And I say, if you owe $1 billion, how do you replace that? That's what reserve currency means. It doesn't mean that Iran is paying, you know, Indian rupees to buy something from India or whatever. It's what balances do people hold and what currencies do they owe. And but trade war is very interesting because if you're a dollar debtor, if you're a manufacturer of, it could be, Persian rugs, it could be, you know, steel I-beams or whatever, you've borrowed in dollars if you're a global player, and now you owe the repayment of dollars. And trade wars and tariffs just mean it's harder for you to get dollars. So what is that going to do? It's going to force you to hold larger dollar balances just as a precaution against, you know, what could happen in the market. And every time Trump and Xi get on the phone and the news is made, you know, markets gyrate. And to protect yourself from insolvency, from missing a payment, you have to hold bigger dollar balances. So the more you have trade war, the more that's going to drive the dollar up against all these other currencies. But the one comment I really want to make about cleanest dirty shirt, which I sort of agree with, but I go much farther than that. The other currencies are all dollar derivatives. They couldn't survive the collapse of the dollar, even if the dollar were to collapse first, which it isn't. And so sometimes people think, oh, you're a shill for the Fed. People say that to me, maybe not as much now as they did. I'm like, no, you don't get it. I've written my thesis about gold backwardation saying the dollar will fail last. That is, all the other currencies are failing first. Now, recently, I set my targets on the Swiss franc. I've called the franc useless, and I define exactly what I mean by that. The bid on your franc is a storage bid. It's like gold. You pay 75 basis points to deposit your francs. Saving in Swiss francs is a Sisyphean task now. And so with that, I decided to look at gold measured in francs. Gold is in permanent backwardation in Swiss francs. That is, I don't have the data to prove it, but I would bet that it's been true since 2015. So we're going on 4 years of backwardation. And the backwardation goes out to every maturity on the futures market. And so I think the Swiss franc is going to fail. Now, interestingly, most of the people in the world disagree with me. They think the Swiss franc is arguably the best of the paper currencies. And I say, well, best or not, or whatever, here's this problem. They've issued so many in their attempts to peg it to the euro that when the peg finally snapped, when they hit their stop loss limit, they left the world so flooded in francs that basically it's now useless. And, this is the process of gold, you know, withdrawing its bid on francs. We'll see how that plays out. But I think, there's a similar argument to be made, or different, but a similar conclusion with the Chinese yuan. Everybody of any degree of wealth in China is desperately trying to get his capital out of the yuan. Now, it's illegal to do so, right? They've had capital control since the beginning, I mean, forever. And in 2017, they ratcheted them up three times. In 2018, I don't know what else they did. I mean, it's illegal, and this is a place where, you know, they disappear you if they don't like what you're doing, and everybody's willing to risk it to get their capital out because the Chinese have been so profligate with credit. They make our own government, you know, look like a sober airman rather than a drunken seaman in terms of how they borrowed. So I read a statistic, and Brent, you may know the statistic as well. I think it was between 2009 and 2014, the Chinese banking system created more debt than the U.S. banking system had since inception in 1789.
Yeah,
I know exactly which one you're talking about. I read that too.
Yeah.
And, Ghost Cities doesn't even begin to describe the malinvestment that's gone on there. And so all of that debt is headed to default and all of those people. So when China, people say, Luke Roman, for example, would say, well, China is de-dollarizing. You know, look at the People's Bank of China selling dollars. They're forced to take the other side of the trade. It's the Chinese people that are unwilling to hold the yuan as a dollar proxy anymore. they don't trust the peg, so they say, well, fine, I'll sell my yuan, I'll buy dollars. And if the People's Bank of China doesn't want the yuan to collapse, then they're forced to take the other side of the trade with, okay, well, we'll sell dollars and buy the yuan. How long can that go on? How long can that last? You know, I don't have the data on that. I don't know. But all I know is when central banks decide they want to defend, you know, some line in the sand, they will always be overrun in the end.
Yeah.
You don't know is how many tricks they have up their sleeve in the meantime.
Oh, what a perfect way to put it. For those of you just joining us, we were talking to Brent Johnson and Keith Weiner, talking about gold and a little bit of politics, mostly markets. You know, Keith, I think that you hit on some. First of all, that data point on China was absolutely mind blowing to me. You brought up China, so I want to pivot over there and get both your thoughts. The whole China situation, and then hold on one second. I digress. I want to give a little overview. A lot of the listeners are probably sitting there going, you know, I don't even know what these guys are talking about. This is over my head. I get it. All right, and the whole point of our radio show, Know Your Risk Radio, is trying to break down these complex things so people that can understand it. I don't expect that the listeners of this show are all of a sudden going to become PhD level thinkers like you guys in the world of finance. But what we're trying to get across is, and I had Bill Fleckenstein on the show a couple weeks back, and he agreed with this as well, is that, look, if you are investing in the same portfolio that your mom and dad did and you're expecting it to play out okay, it's just not going to happen, right? You've got to do things differently. You've got to manage your risk better. And I think a perfect illustration of that is this absolute gong show that is the Chinese economy. You're probably tired of me putting the hashtags and tweeting and replying to all your tweets, Brent. But that's why I just jokingly put this up all the time, China playing go. I mean, literally the rationale I don't even know the right way to put it, but the underlying thesis of the Chinese economy, in my opinion, is equivalent to a child thinking that you've still got money as long as you've got checks in your checkbook. Right. I mean, it's. Talk about a zombie, right? It's a like you said, it's a zombie government. I'm looking at the amount of global growth that China has, the percentage of global growth that they've put on the board in the last 10 years. And, it looks to me like their end game is coming. Brent, give me an overview of that whole China thing, your take on it, and then how it plays into what we've been discussing already.
Well, I really think this is what it comes down to, and I've used this analogy in a couple different presentations that I've made and speeches that I've given. Is I've used this analogy of Keith referred to a movie earlier. I'm going to refer to a movie now called The Prestige, and it's one of my favorite movies of all time, and it's basically about these dueling magicians.
It's a good flick.
They each want to be the greatest magician in the world, and you know. All magic tricks have the same three steps. They have the pledge, the turn, and then the prestige. You know, the pledge is what they say they're going to do. The turn is they do the trick, and the prestige is when they either bring the thing to pull the rabbit out of the hat or whatever it is, and that's called the prestige. And the question is, how do they do the trick, right? And in this movie, one of the magicians is better than the other one, but the guy who wasn't as good is a better marketer, and he's a better showman. So even though his trick isn't done as well, and he isn't as clever at his trick, he sells it better because he's a better marketer. But the fact is, they're both doing the same trick the exact same way. And that's really kind of how I view China. China has marketed themselves as these very wise and long-term thinking, smarter than everybody else leaders, and that they have brought, this once great empire back from the hinterlands to the forefront of the global supremacy. And they have, but they've done it using the same trick as everybody else, and that is they've printed money or they've extended credit. And they haven't said they've done it, and they've said it's due to all these other things, but at the end of the day, you just look at the amount of credit that they've created. And I'm telling you, if you can't throw a great party with $50 trillion, then you shouldn't be in the party business. they've extended $50 trillion worth of credit. Of course they're going to have GDP growth. Of course they're going to have some amazing progress. But, we're getting to the point where it's time for the prestige, and now they've got to pay all this money back, and they can't do it. You know, we're kind of hitting the point where, you know, it's time for them to wow the audience. And, you know, in my opinion, they're going to be standing there naked. I don't think that they can pull it off. Now, it's possible they can. Maybe they're a better magician than I think they are, and maybe they have some ace up their sleeve that I can't see. But I think we're getting to the point where China is going to be shown to be the, you know, again, these magicians, there is no magic. It's all a trick. It's all an illusion, right?
Yeah.
Everybody knows the magic isn't real. It's just how long can they extend the trick and how well can they disguise what they're actually doing? And, you know, I think we're getting to the point where the disguise is going to be blown and, you know, where it's going to have severe ramifications. Now, the U.S. is doing the same trick. I'm not up here saying that the U.S. is not. Of course we're doing the same trick. We, you know, the whole world is doing the same trick. I just happen to think that, you know, the rubber is going to hit the road in China before it hits here.
No, and I completely agree with it. A couple things before we get Keith's thoughts on this, which I'm looking forward to. But the other big thing to me that I think nobody's looking is when this hits the fan, I think one of the biggest differences is we won't, here in our domestic economy, there won't be a rush to the yuan. Right. And that's the thing that I don't think people are putting together. The rush is going to be to the dollars. Right. No one's running to the yuan. And that to me is what, you know, where that I love about Brent's, you know, milkshake theory, because I feel like, hey, we're getting out here into theoretical discussion. What is the practical reality of it? The practical reality is everybody, whether they like it or not, is whether they like it or not, has got to run to the dollar. The other thing I love you talking about. Magic, and this is sort of my point. It's a bit ethereal. Hang with me, but my feeling about, you know, we're not talking hyperbolic when we're sitting there saying these guys are magicians. The head of the Lithuanian Central Bank referred to central bankers as "quote unquote" the magic people. I don't know if you guys, was a few years back.
Yeah, I remember that.
This is what these people think of themselves. Ben Hunt, Epsilon Theory. He referred to them as like the modern. What do you call them? The shaman. You know, they're like the economic priests of the. I mean, these people are referring to themselves as magic people. We're just going along. We're this isn't hyperbole.
No, and I think, you know, to be, I mean, I'm going to give Keith a plug here. So for anybody who isn't already familiar with Keith, and I know most people in the gold world already are, but if you're not in the gold world and for whatever reason you haven't come across Keith yet, you know, I strongly encourage you to go to his site and read his stuff, because I think Keith understands gold as well as anybody.
Yep.
But he's also very practical about it. He's very matter of fact about it. He doesn't, you know, really deal in hyperbole. He doesn't, you know, deal with conspiracy theory other than to potentially debunk it. And, you know, I think there's not a whole lot of people in the gold world who can also, you know, live in the fiat world, if that makes sense.
Yes.
You know, again, a lot of the people in the gold world are kind of absolutists, and that's fine. If that's what they want to be, that's fine. But the reality is the rest of the world is a fiat world. And that fiat world at some point will end, and you better own some gold when it does. But the reality is most of the world is a fiat world, and most of the world does not believe in gold the same way that I do and Keith does and perhaps you do and some of our listeners do. And someday that will be forced upon them. But in the meantime, you know, it's a Keynesian world, and it's a fiat world, and that world has different rules than the absolute world. And, you know, I think it's important that when you invest or when you allocate capital or when you give advice, that you don't just, you know, give advice on what you think is right that should happen or that you would like to see happen, but that's actually going to happen, you know. It would be great if we could get rid of all the central banks, and it would be great if we could get rid of the Keynesian economics that transfers wealth from one set of citizens to another. And maybe someday we'll get there, but right now we are not there. That's not the way the world works right now. And to invest specifically for that eventuality, it may happen, but you could get your head cut off along the road to there. And so, anyway, I kind of run off on a tangent there, but I think that's very important to understand.
No, and I actually appreciate that, because I could not agree with you more. And I have these discussions with our clients all the time. They're sitting there going, Zach, I heard your show. I agree with you 100%. Why aren't we doing this? Why aren't we doing that? And I look at them and I go, look, you know, I'm not a charlatan. I do my research. If I don't know, I don't know. But having said all that, I'm managing your nest egg. I'm managing your retirement money. This has to work out whether I'm right or not, right? We can't go all in on my take on it. And I'll plug Keith right along with you, because I love his stuff. Go to monetarymetals.com. Find him on Twitter. What's the Twitter handle, Keith?
I think I'm at KWiener01.
Okay, at KWiener01. Anyway, the thing I love about it, because this is exactly the camp I'm on, and to bring Luke Grohman back up, he's got a quote that I love, which is he believes gold will be the credit default swap of this cycle eventually, right? I agree too. But, Keith, I echo what Brent said, because you're so knowledgeable about gold. Obviously, that's what you're focused on, but you're not a gold bug, right? And that's, you know, we've got the reality being injected into that conversation. If you want to understand gold, Keith's the guy to listen to. Now, Keith, to you on this China thing and how you see that, approach that. I want to hear your thoughts on this as well. And then also the way gold will play into that and the role gold will play in this whole China situation.
And I agree with everything Brent said, and I love, you know, and really putting a fine point on that. It's not going to be Americans running out to buy yuan. I just think it's brilliant, because it just captures it, right? And no, it's inarguable. I love arguments that are inarguable.
Right.
I disagree with only one thing that Brent said, and he said everybody knows this is an illusion, and that's where I think that actually most people don't, which is why we still have central
banking.
That's a
fair point. Fair point.
And
I can see that point.
I'm thinking of Mises talking about Keynes, and he said, you know, Keynes didn't teach us the miracle of, I think he said, turning water into wine, if I remember right. But the part that sticks out of my mind is he taught us a much more prosaic trick of eating the seed corn. And, you know, getting to the, what did you call it? There's the promise, the turn, and the prestige. Is that the three? Three steps. You know, the promise is we're going to make you richer. You know, the trick is, or the turn is we boost up GDP, but what they're actually doing is incentivizing the consumption of the seed corn, which adds lots of GDP, and it makes everybody feel richer while they're having that orgy of capital consumption. And I write almost as much about capital consumption as I do about gold.
Hold on, Keith. I got to stop you there, because that the orgy of capital consumption, I'm just telling you right now, I'm stealing that from you, and I'm going to use that. Okay. I just love that. The orgy of capital consumption. That is so well put. Anyway, sorry for interrupting you. I just love that.
No worries. That's what the U.S. is doing, and I totally agree. You guys both said it, but, you know, the U.S. is doing the same trick that China is, or China is doing the same trick as the U.S. is and every other country. That's what Keynesianism and, frankly, monetarism as well. It's all about regulating, you know, juicing up GDP with capital consumption. But I add another layer of analysis to this when I look at there's something weird here, and you're talking earlier about how big a name is Brent or me or whatever. You know, I've got a pretty good awareness of where I rank in the world. But, you know, I have a bit of a name, but I'm not the biggest name in the world. If you do a Google search on marginal productivity of debt, this is not my term. This term has existed back many, many decades at least. I don't know who coined it. I don't research the history of these terms. But if you do a Google search on that, my articles dominate the first page of Google search results. It's not because I'm the biggest name in economics. Far from it. It's because nobody else bloody writes about this term. And the reason why they don't write about it is because it's a bearer of bad news. They don't like what it's showing. So marginal productivity of debt is if you borrow, it says, how much GDP do you add if you add a fresh, newly borrowed dollar of debt? And this has been in secular decline since at least 1950. So it's not new. It's nothing to do with Trump, Obama, Bush, Clinton, whatever. Very old problem. And so I wrote an article that I think is one of my more important called The Heat Death of the Economic Universe. What happens if marginal productivity of debt keeps falling? Well, you have to lower the interest rate. That's part of the dynamic that's in play. What happens when things get negative? Right? So we have negative interest rates in Switzerland. They have them in Germany and I believe in Scandinavia still. The UK, the two-year gilt has been flirting with negative and negative in Japan. And that's the falling interest rates have the juice of GDP. But how do you, what happens when interest rate gets negative? And so I like to explain it this way. So suppose you are the CEO of a loss-producing, loss-making enterprise, and you lose investor capital at the rate of 1% per year. Well, in any normal universe, your enterprise should be shut down. The sooner, the better. And what's left of your capital and obviously all your people should go to other enterprises that produce wealth. But what if you could borrow at minus two? You borrow at minus two and you only destroy it minus one. You actually have a net profit. And that's sort of the tenor of our world today. That's the flip side of all this. And so when things go negative, you just accelerate the destruction, to a terrifying rate. And, I don't know if there's a term for it in the magic world in that analogy, but I guess there's the trick that you're actually doing. And then there's what the audience, is tricked into believing they see. And I guess the prestige is the audience sees the rabbit coming out of the hat. The actual trick is that while you distracted the audience with the flourish of the cape and the loud noise, there was a little flip top on your table and it flipped over, and then you replaced the empty hat with a hat with a rabbit in it. So when you reach down, the rabbit's there to pull out a hat. That's the prosaic reality. What you're really doing is you're perversely incentivizing people to eat the seed corn. And so to your comment earlier, Zach, about a wall, absolutely, there's a very, very hard wall. And that wall is what happens when you run out of capital to be consumed. Yeah. Well, then all sorts of things will break and break in much bigger ways than anybody can imagine. And relationships will break and, industries will break. And people can't really picture what that's going to be like.
Well,
horrific.
Yeah, and that to me is the insidious aspect of what central banks have become, because their success, and I use that term on a very loose relative basis, but their success, in my opinion, has been the greatest problem and the greatest danger, meaning that, you've got people running around here in their 401ks and their passive index funds and saying, oh, yeah, these percentages are playing out. This is good. Everything's working. And that, to me, like I said, is the insidious nature of what central banks have become, meaning that they are symptom treaters, and they have masked the symptoms to the point where they, in my opinion, now have become the biggest danger. And the way I think about it, it's like, hey, if we want to increase tourism on this beach, we've got to get rid of all the don't swim in the water because there's crocodile signs, right? We got to increase tourism, so we got to get rid of all those warning signs, and yet never dealing with the fact that there's still crocodiles in the water. You know what I mean? So it's the masking of the symptoms, the success, people clapping and saying, oh, good, Jerome Powell eased on rates and markets went back up. It's like, no. They're masking the problems, and the sad thing about it is there's just more crocodiles flocking to the water constantly, and this is an eventuality. And I'm looking around at the world just going, they've complicated it to a point where the average investor doesn't have any clue what's going on. You guys like us that do it for a living are still trying to figure it out because it's so, we're just out there, right? I mean, this is stuff. I remember my grandfather was writing books and talking about monetizing debt back in the 80s and saying it's coming, and watch it. And we just sat there and watched the Fed monetize $4 trillion of debt over the last decade. No one blinks. It's absolutely mind-blowing to me. And like I said, I love the discussions on China because I've only got you guys for about five more minutes here. Thoughts on how this does play out in China? And then I want to get the thoughts on how it plays out in China, where you think we are along the cycle right now of this in China. And then I want to hear both of your thoughts on gold specifically, and I want to hear how much you guys think people should have in their portfolio gold exposure and what you think the path of gold will be over the next decade. So, again, Brent, we'll start with you, and then we'll go to Keith.
Okay, so, obviously – anybody who's heard me talk in the last couple of years knows I'm a big dollar bull. That hasn't changed. I think that's going to go much higher versus other currencies. I think that is going to force China to eventually, and I think it'll be, I don't think it's going to be next week, but I think we're getting much closer to the day when they eventually have to get rid of the peg. I don't think that they can maintain the peg with the dollar and keep their economy from imploding, basically. And without going into too big of a reason of why they have to do that, to maintain the peg, they basically have to keep the same monetary policy as the United States. And, you know, if we're not in easing mode and they need to be, it's hard for them to maintain the peg, you know, while we are tightening monetary policy. So long story short, I think they're going to have to let the peg go. I think they're going to go through a period of deflation where they're going to have to try a bunch of new tricks in order to try to stem that deflation. I am of the opinion that gold probably goes lower before it ultimately goes higher. Now, you know, I've said that for 3 years in a row. No, actually, I started saying it in 2016. I'm a huge, huge advocate for owning gold in your portfolio. I think having anywhere from 15 to 25%, maybe even a little bit more, depending on your circumstances, depending on your other liquidity sources, depending on your age, all that kind of stuff. You know, I see nothing wrong with having, you know, 15 to 25% of your portfolio in gold. That said, if it needs to pay off for you in the next 6 to 12 months, then I wouldn't have that much, because I think it's very possible that gold goes lower before it ultimately goes higher. I just have a really hard time thinking that gold breaks out significantly before the dollar breaks out. I think the dollar will break out first. Now, I'm not telling everybody to go out and sell their gold. I think you should still own your gold, because number one, I could be wrong. And number two, it's possible they go up together. I do think we'll get in a period where there'll be so much chaos out there that the dollar and gold will rise together. But
agreed.
Long story short, I think China has a lot of pain to come. I think it's going to happen in the next 12 to 18 months. I think their peg is going to go. I think that's going to make the dollar a lot, lot stronger. I think that's going to put pressure on gold for a number of reasons. But ultimately, gold will win this battle. When this whole big battle is ultimately done and all the zombies are gone, gold will still be standing. So I guess I'll just leave it at that.
Yep. All right, Keith, same to you. Where are we at in this Chinese thing? How do you see it playing out? And then what your outlook is for gold over the next, you know, 10 years?
You know, well, first of all, as far as gold in the portfolio, we pay interest on gold. So our perspective is you can hold more because you can still get an income off of it without selling the gold. So I'm kind of biased on that. So I'd say the more the merrier. But obviously, if you have a liquidity need, you know, I wouldn't recommend you buy gold in order to sell it 6 months because you got a tax bill due or something. As to China, the one thing I've learned in all this, so back in 2011 to 2012, I figured we probably had 5 to 7 years before we hit permanent gold backwardation and the system collapsed. And obviously, we're more than 5 to 7 years now from that moment in time. And I don't think we're that close yet to collapse, certainly here in America. The one thing I learned out of that is, first of all, there's a lot of ruin in the nation, which Adam Smith said. And secondly, they have a lot more tricks up their sleeves than you might think.
Yep.
So I don't feel real comfortable predicting when the China catastrophe occurs. I certainly wouldn't be surprised if I read, you know, started happening tomorrow morning, but I also wouldn't be surprised if it lingered, you know, for years yet. And I don't know enough about the China specifics to opine on that, but I'll just say I'm very cautious about trying to predict that. As to the gold price and the dollar price, I certainly agree with the thesis that in terms of other currencies, the dollar trend is up, and in terms of the dollar, gold is up, which of course I say it's actually the dollar going down. And I use the analogy of the lighthouse. You know, you're in a small boat that's also sinking, tossing in 20-foot swells in a big storm, and you're saying, well, is the lighthouse going up with volatility? And that's, you know, looking at gold, gold's really the lighthouse, but we're in this dollar boat saying gold is going up.
Yeah.
But all of that said, I think, so what I see, we run a econometric type model to calculate what we call the fundamental price of gold. So we ask the question, you know, hypothetically, if you look at the futures market people can use very big leverage, 10 to 1 or more, to buy or sell gold futures, and same thing for silver. And so they can have a pretty big price, a pretty big impact on the price at the margin, you know, one way or the other. But people that are using big leverage are obviously by nature very short-term, you know, trades. So we asked the hypothetical question, what if you were to back out of the price the impact of all this leveraged future stuff? Where would metal be clearing in just a pure spot market? And so we built an econometric model to answer that based on the my theoretical work that I did in my dissertation. And so we call it the monetary metals fundamental price on gold. And, you know, the fundamental price is a bit over the market. So in that sense, I guess we'd say we're short to intermediate term bullish, but not huge amounts. I mean, $50.
Yeah, I think I saw it at 1330 on your website today.
Yeah, so, you know, that was when the price was, you know, 1280, so that's $50 above market, something like that. We'll see what it does today. You know, we're not seeing any of the signs of the calamities, catastrophes in the dollar. And so, you know, in terms of gold hitting $2,000 or $10,000 or whatever, which I always say to folks when they express that as a wish, I always say, be careful what you wish for.
Yeah.
You know, you might have an awful lot of dollars, but you might be able to buy a Ferrari with it, but you might be living in a world where if you had a Ferrari, you wouldn't dare bring it out.
Right.
So if you had a Ferrari and you lived in Caracas, Venezuela today, you would be hiding that thing, you know, the deepest corner of your garage that you could, because they kill you. You know, you're at that
level. Absolutely.
I don't see anything like that on the horizon at the moment. That said, that is the end game. And I totally am with Brent that, you know, you can get your head cut off in the meantime if you were to go out and buy a lot of gold futures with leverage, you know, betting that gold has to go to 10,000. It wouldn't at all surprise me if there was enough of a dip in the price to destroy you. Kane's got very few things right. But one of the things he got right was he said markets can stay irrational longer than you can stay solvent.
I love that. Yeah.
And
if the ultimate destination thing. Many people have heard that saying, but nobody ever thinks it can happen to them.
Nope. Yep. Yeah. Absolutely.
Right. I'm special. It's not going to happen to me.
Yeah. Not in my backyard.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. No. I was having a discussion the other day, and I said, we did really well during the financial collapse in 2008-2009, but I bought a house at the end of 2006. I was short the market and bought a house, and I fell victim to that exact same thing. Well, everybody else's house. Why that irrationality existed at that time, I don't know. It still doesn't make sense to me. And you guys know what happened if I bought a house in 2006, obviously. But yeah, it even happened to me. Well, hey guys, you've stuck around even longer. I literally could sit here and continue this all day long. I know you guys both got to go, but I want to say thank you for both of you being on. Fascinating conversation. Keith, great to get you on here for your maiden voyage. Brent, great to have you back. Just awesome, awesome conversation. Fascinating stuff. And we got to do it again, guys. I, like I said, as we talked, I just kept generating more and more things I wanted to hear your guys' thoughts on. So, again, appreciate it. You can follow Brent at @AU. Hold on, Brent, I'm forgetting your Twitter moniker. What is it?
At Santiago AU Fund.
Yep. And then Keith, yours one more time.
I believe, and it's funny, I don't know offhand. I believe I'm at KWeiner01.
But they can do monetarymetals.com. Just Google Keith Weiner. You got
It's monetary-metals.com.
Oh, sorry about that. See, I'm giving bad info here. You got to stop me.
I think that I'm going to help you out here. There's two different ones. There's at KeithWeiner01, and then there's at Monetary Metals as well. There's two of them.
Fantastic.
Yeah, on Twitter. Yes, yeah.
All right, guys. Well, that's it for this week's show. Thank you so much for joining us. And I just would love to say go Hawks, but can't do it, which Darren just reminded me of. Anyway, have a great weekend, and we'll see you next week. This is Know Your Risk Radio on AM 770 KTTH.
Thanks for listening to Know Your Risk Radio. Whether it's preservation of capital or an aggressive growth strategy, every investor needs a clearly defined risk profile. Schedule your free risk review at knowyourriskradio.com. Tune in next week to Know Your Risk Radio with your host, Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.